Here's Johnny.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for
Valley Free Radio, WXOJ LP Northampton.
Welcome to Out There. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Today's topic is firewood and wood stoves. But first, I have a little kind motorist story. The other day, it was pouring rain, and I got a call from a motorist who said they had picked up a couple of pedal people tubs in the middle of South Street down by the Mill River, and they wanted to know how they could return them to us. And a little while later, they came by my house in Florence. It was Dave Dussault. He thought they were Dussault totes, but then when he picked them up, he saw they said pedal people, and he kindly brought them back to us. Thanks, Dave. In the next hour, you'll hear tips and stories from local wood heaters about the process. For me personally, I grew up collecting firewood from the woods with my family and burning it for heat until I was about 15. And for the next 20 years, I lived in mostly urban areas without it. And I had my doubts about whether or not it made sense as an environmentally responsible heating fuel. I had concerns about the smoke and particulate matter. But still, it seemed like locally sourced renewable energy would intuitively have to be better than gas or oil drilled and transported from far away. And if we could collect our firewood from nearby waste wood without requiring fossil fuels, without doing the math, that would surely win out from a carbon footprint point of view. So according to the research that I did for this show, it sounds like if you burn in an EPA-certified stove or its equivalent, and if you burn seasoned wood hot without smoldering it, and you get firewood from a nearby sustainably harvested source, then burning wood is better for the environment than burning fossil fuels. Of course, insulating, weather sealing, living in smaller spaces, sharing living space, keeping the house cooler, and wearing more clothes are the first things to do to reduce energy consumption. So I'd like to share a little bit more about our wood heating situation at my house in Florence. Here's one of my housemates, Alex Jarrett, speaking on a recording. Alex, what are some of the reasons you wanted to get a wood stove in your home?
Comfort was a big one in terms of having like the radiant heat and, you know, having a central place that you can go to if you're feeling cold. But if it's too hot, you can just go further away from it. Before, we used to have a system that would blow hot air, and it only kind of felt warm while it was blowing, and then it stopped. I like saving money, but more specifically, I like doing work that I love and doing work that, like, as a household, we like to do together. And so that's, you know, work that we don't have to go out and make money in the market economy in order to meet our needs. Resiliency. There was a Halloween storm a few years ago where the power was out for a while, and a lot of neighbors didn't have heat or hot water, and so we got to invite them to come over and be warm and make their coffee and such. And pollution in terms of, I mean, wood stoves do pollute, but we're unhiding the pollution that's happening. In terms of, you know, if you use natural gas or oil, there's a whole bunch of hidden processes that happen in order to get that to you. And on our processes, it's very clear what's happening. And if you see, you know, if you're not burning the fire right, then when you go outside, you'll see the smoke and you'll see the pollution. But so
you'll smell it directly.
Yeah, you'll smell it directly. And we do try to minimize as much as possible what we pollute. But, yeah, being able to see it helps with that. Another thing I like about the wood stove is that we get to cook on it. And we can have, you know, water heating up. We can cook, you know, stocks and things that take a long time to cook and just let them simmer.
So Alex and I and our other housemates at the time, we knew we wanted a wood stove. And I knew we wanted to find our own firewood. But I also knew I wasn't interested in operating a chainsaw. I'd seen a two-person saw in the barn in Kentucky where I grew up, but I didn't know if it would be feasible to cut a New England winter's worth of wood with it. Now, 5 years later, I'm thrilled to say, so far, so good. I don't know how long it will continue, but for now, it's really working for us. Anyway, so the saw in Kentucky, my dad said I could have it, so I brought it back to Northampton on the Greyhound bus. And I thought, if I could get this thing to work, then I wouldn't have to use a chainsaw with its noise and cost and smell and speeding chain blade. So I got a friend, and we each got on opposite sides of a log and tried to cut it. It was hard work. It was an effort I didn't think I'd be able to sustain very long. I was disappointed. I knew I needed help figuring this thing out. After all, the forests of New England were readily cut down by hand, so I knew it was doable. One of my Pedal People customers, Greg Young, mentioned to me once that he used to be on the lumberjack team in college. Now he was a machinist at Smith College. Well, this was 5 years ago. Now he's actually retired. But anyway, Greg invited me to come by for some sharpening tips. He knew from personal experience that two-person saws were an effective, easy-to-use tool, if you had the right saw and it was well-maintained. So I put the saw on my bicycle and rode down to the Smith College machine shop. Greg drew me diagrams with numbers and angles and cutting teeth versus knockout teeth and the kerf and things like that, all the relationships. I left inspired and excited to put my newfound knowledge to use in the pursuit of collecting my own heating fuel. Then along came Dwayne Rainey, who said, "My uncle's got lots of two-person saws in his barn out on Sylvester Road. I know they work because I had to use them as a boy. Let me bring you one." It turns out the saw Dwayne brought was a thinner blade and more curved, shorter in height, and with a little sharpening, like Greg said, it worked. It worked! I built the sawhorse for home, and Dwayne built a saw pony for a take into the woods, and we were one step closer to energy independence. Here's Dwayne. So now I've been sawing wood with Dwayne Rainey, also known as Split Second. And that was elm that just went flying. Elm, no, for being stringy. Mr. Rainey, can you tell me, how did you come to be such a good woodsman?
It all started way back when I was a little boy. It was like in 1972. And gas prices were high, gas lines were long. And so a lot of people decided that they would start heating their houses with wood stoves. My father decided that we were going to get a wood stove, because we had like 18 acres of land with lots of woods on it. So he got me and my brother one day down in our cellar and showing us where we're going to stack this wood. And we're thinking a wood truck's going to pull in and dump a bunch of wood. And he informed us that no, we were going to cut the wood. So my brother and I started getting excited because my uncle had a chainsaw. And so we figured, great, we're going to get a chainsaw. And he goes, "Just stand there a minute." And he walked into another section of the cellar, and he come out and says, "This is your new best friend." And he passes the two-person saw. He says, "You boys are either going to learn how to work together or kill each other trying." And so that was when we started cutting with a two-person saw. Every spring, every winter, going down into the woods and cutting trees with a two-person saw. When I left 5 years later, our land was decorated with 3-foot stumps.
So you felled them with a two-person saw too?
Yeah. That's why there was all those 3-foot stumps.
Huh. So the saw that you and I are using today was from your childhood?
Yeah. One of them.
One of them. It's a crosscut saw. Did you have a felling saw? Was it a different saw? Or
nope.
Same saw?
One saw.
How did you keep it from binding? You did a couple of angle cuts?
No.
Just cut with the way the tree, the gravity, the
weight
of the tree?
Yeah, if it was windy out, we were like, we said, "Stop pulling, I'm not pulling, you're pushing." Because the saw would bind, and when the wind would blow one way and give us, we'd saw real fast until it would come back the other way and bind the saw. And then we wait till it started going again so real fast and let it fall over. So there were like 6-8 inches and maybe 20 feet long, and we just drag them out of the woods.
Did it put a bad taste in your mouth having to do that in terms of using two-person saws?
No, but we were just slave labor. I mean, my father, my youngest brother, would be in a cellar stacking all this green wood that my father would, because none of our wood was seasoned. And he didn't care what it was, pine, anything that was there, we burned, because he was saving money.
And he had free labor.
And free labor.
So that was Dwayne Rainey, my favorite two-person sawing partner. This is Out There on WXOJLP, and I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. We've been talking about firewood collection. So I was talking about the saw, the two-person saw that I got to start cutting firewood with. And so I got some tips about how to sharpen it, but eventually I'd sharpened the teeth of the saw down so much that they lost their kerf. That is the offset angle, the way the tip of each cutting tooth sticks out left or right so it can cut a wider path through the wood than the width of the blade. So the saw was binding. It was getting hung up when it tried to pass through the wood. So the teeth needed to be set or bent, each one out left or right, just a tiny bit. A tiny bit being, according to the books, between 12 and 15 thousandths of an inch. So how do you do that? Well, I did some internet research and I asked some friends, and I discovered that my friend Daniel Staub in Springfield, he'd encountered a similar problem with his saw and had borrowed or acquired tools to fix it. He had a hammer, like a small tinner's hammer, I think it's called, an anvil, a freehand anvil, and a tool called a spider, which measures measures if the tooth has been bent out the right amount or not. So I made my way to Springfield one cold winter day and stood in the backyard with Daniel while he demonstrated how to pound on each tooth with a hammer, holding the anvil behind the tooth. He had the saw upside down and a vise kind of jig that he'd made on a stump in the backyard. And he'd pound each tooth and then measure it with the spider, measure the bend. He gave me the hammer and the anvil and he said, "Here, you do it." I was like, "Oh, I'm supposed to just whack this tiny sharp tooth with a hammer and it's supposed to bend exactly the right amount, this hair of an inch or something?" First of all, I thought, I'm probably going to bash up the teeth because I'm not that good of an aim. And it just, like, how could I bend it the right amount? I asked him, "Are you sure the teeth won't break?" "Just try it," Daniel said. "Don't worry about your aim. Trust that you'll get better. That's the only way to learn. Just start doing it." Well, it was incredibly frustrating. I felt impotent, like shouting into emptiness. I'd whack, the saw would rattle, the anvil would bounce back, and I'd have no idea what tooth or where I'd even hit. I'd measure with a spider, no change. I'd try again, same result. But Daniel wasn't giving up. "Keep trying, you'll get it eventually," he said. Well, I didn't get it that day at his house in Springfield. But I had to keep trying. Our whole firewood collection operation in Florence was stalled because I couldn't figure out how to bend the teeth of the saw. Unacceptable. I had to figure it out. Daniel let me bring the tools to my house. And you know what? He was right. After a lot of trial, and I don't even know if I was making errors or not, it seemed that ambiguous, but after a lot of trial, I sort of got the hang of it. Enough to get the saw back in action. The housemates and Dwayne and I were all pretty happy to have the chance to saw together again. We'd missed it. The soothing exercise outside, the camaraderie and the sense of purpose. Now it's a favorite wintertime activity to do with friends. Here's my friend now, the novice.
So I'm recording with one hand and sawing with the other.
Good.
I probably couldn't do this while I was chainsawing. And just carry on a conversation. How hard is it to saw wood and carry on a conversation at the same time?
It's not hard. This is my second time. Sometimes
I get excited about our conversation, and Lucy has to remind me that I'm not cutting straight, but it's fun.
So tell me now, how strenuous is it to saw wood?
Not strenuous at all. Well, you get warm.
Yeah, we just finished cutting these two big pieces, and you're not breathing hard at all.
Not at all. And I'm smiling. I can keep conversation.
But it's enough to warm you up.
Yes, yeah, actually, it's really warm, too hot almost. You don't need a fire almost. Yeah. How did you carry this wood from the bike park?
On the bike trailers. So how long now do you think you could continue to saw wood for? I should say that right now we've sawed two pieces off of this log. It's about a 13-inch diameter log, or 12-inch. And it's taken us a little while to cut these first two pieces because, you know, we're hanging out in the sunshine and taking it easy. When I say a while, I mean like 15 minutes probably. Mm-hmm. So how long do you think you could continue to cut for?
I can continue going until I need to use bathroom.
and then you'll be ready to keep going again.
Yes.
When you get out.
Yeah.
But your muscles aren't getting like sore, tired?
No.
Nope.
Yeah? No. Nope. Right. Warming up.
So we haven't done this together much. This is only our second time. So we don't really have a rhythm yet. Uh-huh. But it's pretty slow compared to a chainsaw, but it speed everything.
Well, we can try to use some music to speed us up, but I enjoy this pace, slow. Speed is not everything. I'm having fun, and yeah.
Maybe as long as we cut it and split it faster than we burn it,
yeah,
we can keep ahead.
Yes.
That was my friend now sawing in the backyard. I mentioned Greg, who had given me some sharpening tips. He emailed me the other day with some more when I asked him. He says, as far as techniques, probably the most important thing is to have a sharp saw. He says that even in competition sawing, which he did when he was in college, even the temperature makes a difference as to how the saw is sharpened, as to both the raker depth and set. He's talking about the raker teeth as compared to the cutting teeth. The cutting teeth slice through across the grain, and then the raker teeth are like little chisels that chisel out what's been cut by each side of the cutting teeth. Greg says, if your saw is sharpened properly, you should get nice long strings of chips coming off as you saw instead of tiny dust flakes. The motion of sawing should be a slight rocking or arc as the saw travels and should resemble the top curve of the log, but not a lot of curve. This is true with a single person bow saw too. Also important for sawing efficiency is to have a full length of travel. So you're using the whole length of the saw, because every time you change directions, you're losing momentum. That's partly why circular saws are so efficient. Greg had also told me a few years ago that when he went back for his 40th college reunion, there was a sawing competition, and he and his old sawing buddy competed against some of the young bucks, and they did great. I think he said they came in like second, just trying to show that it's not all about brute strength. Though brute strength is very helpful, especially when it comes to putting logs on the sawhorse or hauling logs out of the woods. So next I have a little song. This is Tommy McLennan, Crosscut Saw Blues from 1941, I believe.
Crosscut saw, drive me crawl your law. I'm a crosscut saw, drive me crawl your law. I'll cut your wood so easy, can't help but say I do. They call me wooden cutting Slim, call me wooden cutting Ben. But the woman I did wooden cutting for, she wants me back again, cause I'm a cross cut soul. Baby, drive me cross your low. I'll cut your wood so easy, can't help but say I do. Yeah. Not playing that one, time. Yeah. I'm a cross cut soul. Baby, drive me cross your low. Cut your wood so easy, can't help but say I do. I got a double-bladed axe and it sure cuts good. Try my cross-cut saw, yeah, we'll eat on through the wood. Call my cross-cut saw, baby, drive me cross your low. I'll cut your wood so easy, can't help but say I do. I'll cut your wood in the morning, cut your wood late at night. I cut your wood by the time I don't think called a fuss and fight. Cause I'm a cross cut saw, baby, drive me cross your low. Yeah. I'll cut your wood so easy, can't help but say I do.
You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio, WXOJ LP 103.3 FM. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. We're talking about firewood collection and wood heat. So I've said that, like in my house, we've been able to collect all our firewood by hand with the bike trailer and the two-person saw. And it works for us because we have at least three people able to do the labor. And sometimes other friends come over as well. There's plenty of human energy out there. Just look at all the people in workout rooms trying to get exercise. They can come to my backyard. And in terms of how long it takes, sawing wood for an hour doesn't take any longer than watching a movie for an hour or being on Facebook for an hour. So the next thing I have for the show, I have some interviews with people who use wood heat. The first one's with John Hoogstraten, who lives in Williamsburg and is a carpenter and a longtime wood heat burner. You go out in the woods, are you cutting down with a chainsaw standing trees or fallen trees, or what's that process like?
I try to glean either trees that are wind fallen, are already on the ground, damaged in some way by a storm, have been taken down by somebody else in their yard and they need it cleaned up. If I have to take down just trees in the woods, I look for trees that are problematic in some way. They have the misfortune of growing in the wrong place, mm-hmm. So they're growing very crooked and poorly, or the forest could be improved in some aesthetic way by the removal of a small tree.
So you'll bring it home, you'll split it.
We have a hydraulic splitter. Uh-huh. I used to always split by hand, but due to warnings from my doctor, I decided to go to a hydraulic splitter just to extend the length of time I would even be able to split wood.
Uh-huh. And then you split it and you stack it in the woodshed. How long does it need to sit cure?
Different species of wood need more time than others. In a broad stroke answer would be the denser the wood, the longer it takes. We burn primarily oak because that's largely what we have. And because we use a masonry heater, this is really sort of a different topic, we actually dry our wood for 2 years to make sure that it's really dry before we heat with it. Some wood doesn't need 2 years. I mean, the rule of thumb is to dry firewood for a year, a full change of seasons before you burn it. We play it safe by going 2 years, and in particular because the oak is so much denser than a lot of the other wood that's out there.
Why is it different with a masonry stove?
The nature of a masonry heater is that there are large parts of it that are inaccessible for cleaning. The interior of a heater has all these channels. where the heat from the fire travels up and back down and around and through these layers of masonry and warm up all that masonry before the exhaust gases from the fire exit into the chimney. Though there's no way to clean those channels, so if we were to burn wood that wasn't properly dried and would get creosote in those areas, it can't be cleaned like a chimney can be.
Could you talk a little bit about the things that people can do to burn their wood more cleanly and prevent creosote buildup?
The best thing is to just make sure it's dry. Just make sure it's absolutely dry wood. Burn it as hot as you can, given the appliance, meaning wood stove, usually, that you have, and the conditions in your house. Some people can burn a stove much hotter if it's just sitting out in the open, away from furniture and away from occupants. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's right in the middle of your living space, you tend not to be able to do that because it's just too uncomfortable or too dangerous.
It probably depends somewhat on the size of your stove, too, making sure the stove is sized appropriately for the space you're trying to heat.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yep. And new stoves burn much more efficiently than old stoves. They burn a higher percentage of the combustible products in the wood. You get more heat out of them than you would have out of an older stove, mm-hmm. but without having to have a blaze going in it.
How do you tell if wood is dry enough?
Partly it can be just experience, just knowing that certain types of wood need a certain length of time. There are ways you can judge by looking at the wood, smelling it. If you take a piece of dry oak and a piece of green, freshly cut oak and smell each one, there's a dramatic difference, a noticeable difference in how they smell. Weight. But again, you need to be able to make a comparison right. if you're sort of new to this. You can take two pieces of dry wood and knock them against each other, and they have kind of a hollow, ringing sound to them. And wet wood doesn't. It just thuds when they hit together. So various little tricks like that.
And when you're actually burning it?
Oh, you'll hear the hissing, and it's almost like you're heating water. Uh-huh. You'll just sit there and hiss and steam instead of burning hot and clean.
Oh, if wood is old and dry rotted or pithy, is it more likely to smoke? Is there any reason to not burn old wood?
It won't have as much heat value in it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a sort of a simple reason not to burn it.
But if it's already in your yard and your other choice is to take it somewhere else.
That's right. I don't think you're doing any harm by burning it. It won't burn very well. You won't get a lot of heat out of it, but for whatever heat it has, if you're willing to feed it into the stove.
Yeah.
One thing you do need to be careful, if it's rotted, it may be rotted because it's been sitting in moist conditions generally, so you do need to make sure that it's not still full of moisture.
So when you start a fire with kindling, what kinds of kindling do you use in terms of size and type of wood?
I have the advantage of being a carpenter and having a woodworking shop, so I generate boxes upon boxes of scraps from my shop, all kiln dried. Mm-hmm. And I just as I generate all this stuff, I box it up and split it into small pieces. This is the one area where I am willing to burn softwoods, pine, things like that. Pine in particular, because it combusts quite readily because of the rosins in it. Pine makes great kindling. It's not a good firewood in bulk form, chunk form. It doesn't have a lot of heat value to it, and it will quickly creosote up a chimney. But it does catch quickly and hot as kindling if it's split up into small pieces and it's very dry.
Do you have any experience cutting with two-person saws?
Long time ago. I think maybe the first time I grabbed a chainsaw and used it, I realized that as much as I dislike loud gas engines and spinning dangerous tools in my hands, that a chainsaw in my mind was appropriate technology, mm-hmm. especially given the need to generate a certain quantity of wood on a regular basis.
What are some of the things you like about being out in the woods collecting firewood?
An excuse to be out in the woods works for me. So if I have work to do out there, that just resonates for me. I'll go spend the day in the woods doing firewood any day over sitting staring at a computer. Make sure whatever you burn, it's just raw wood. It's just clean.
Mm-hmm. How about pallets?
Sure. Yeah, actually, I burn pallet wood.
Mm-hmm. Anything else you'd like to share?
One story does come to mind. Mm-hmm. Cutting firewood in general is seen as a sort of a macho game. It's a man's scene. But I lived in Wyoming for off and on for a couple of years, and discovered in this little town near where we were working up in a national forest. Every summer they had a woodchopper's jamboree, a bunch of loggers events, if you will. We decided to take some time off work and go sit in, be spectators at this thing. And there was various events. They had the big jet engine powered chainsaws, and they also had little buck saws and hand saws and pole climbing and axe cutting and, you know, the full range of stuff. One event in particular that we were amused by was the women's buck saw competition. And they had a list of contestants, mostly younger women who came out. You could tell they were strong, fit, whatever. And they all did well. There was an increasing level of buzz in the audience that we didn't understand. Mm-hmm. But there was clearly something going on. Mm-hmm. And as more and more contestants, you know, took their turn and did well and got a polite round of applause, people were starting to crane their necks and look behind the bleachers and whatnot, and some whispering and murmuring going on. And sure enough, the audience or the announcer of the event played right into the whole thing. You know, we could mm-hmm. tell after a while there was something afoot, and he was part of it. Mm-hmm. And the last contestant, I'm sure this was arranged as well, was finally announced, and the crowd just went nuts. And we thought, what's going on? So we look over, and out from behind the bleachers strolls, it had to be an 85-year-old woman, introduced as Granny so-and-so, I can't remember her name, and she, no kidding, took off her apron, which may also have been staged, grabbed the buck saw, and just blew everybody away. She cut through her wood twice as fast as any of the other women who had competed. And it turns out that she had been cutting firewood for her kitchen stove her entire life. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't that she was bigger, stronger, anything like that. She just knew how to do it. Mm-hmm. And not only was it great fun, but it was also a great lesson in the value of technique and experience and wisdom and all that, as opposed to mm-hmm. brute force and brawn and bigger, faster, stronger, mm-hmm. you know, engines and all that.
What are some tips on technique that can make one person cut a lot faster than another person?
If you think of it in terms of an athletic event, knowing how to use your body efficiently, position, posture, efficiency of motion. I'm sure she had a very sharp saw. Mm-hmm. She knew how, that was one of the things she learned how to do, was to keep her saw razor sharp, not burn a lot of energy doing things that weren't directly cutting the wood.
You got
that was an interview with John Hoog Stratton of from Williamsburg. This is out there on Valley Free Radio. We're talking about burning wood for heat. There's some information I got from a website, woodheat.org. It says that even people who currently heat with wood may be confused and perhaps doubtful about the appropriateness of their use of wood for heating. But it's generally agreed by both energy and forestry scientists that provided harvesting is conducted in a sustainable manner, the combustion of wood for energy production is essentially carbon dioxide neutral when the normal forest regeneration period is considered. When wood combustion replaces the consumption of fossil fuels, then the net reduction in carbon dioxide release is almost immediate. But still, there's smoke and particulates in the air that often you may notice. Like, I know that I notice them often in the mornings at dawn. I'm biking up the bike path, and sometimes the air is thick when I pass through certain houses. Sometimes they have regularly smoldering fires. There's a "Hey Neighbor" kind of letter on this website as well that I liked. I'm going to read. "Hey Neighbor, do you know how much smoke comes out of your chimney after you've rushed off for the day, or when you're inside, or when you've gone to bed? If you don't know, go outside and look at your chimney. If there's smoke, you and your neighbors have a health and safety hazard. Blue or gray smoke indicates a smoldering fire, incomplete combustion, and air pollution. Your use of wood fuel is affecting your neighbor's health and is a public nuisance. Although it could be an improvement, you don't need an efficient high-tech stove to burn cleaner. You need to be a smarter operator. Look at the person with the old stove with little or no smoke compared to the other person with a certified low-emission wood stove who seems to have a smoldering fire almost daily. Which one is the smarter, more efficient, and responsible wood-burning neighbor? During mild weather, if you want to take the chill off without overheating the house, burn a small, hot fire quickly. For the most common form of wood stove, that is, front-loading, updraft, non-catalytic type, this means using smaller and fewer pieces of wood stacked loosely, burning each load with the air supply open until a layer of charcoal is formed, then reducing the air slightly, but not enough to extinguish the flames. Catalytic stoves have special requirements, but when operated properly, these two should have no smoke except for a few minutes at startup. Don't overload your stove, and most importantly, do not let the fire smolder. Your effort to reduce the amount of smoke will be appreciated by all your neighbors. Thank you. There's more information that I'd like to share with you about this. So you may have seen things like, okay, here's the nationally distributed list, 50 ways you can help to save our earth. And they say, don't buy a wood-burning stove. Not only will it contribute to our growing air pollution problem, it will use the trees we so desperately need to clean the air. But I think that's not totally accurate. As long as the trees can be replaced, or when they're cut down, they make space for other trees to grow. And burning wood is definitely more appropriate than burning fossil fuels because it's a renewable source. But burning wood isn't for everybody. If you live in a densely populated urban area, or if your wood fuel will need to be shipped from far away, it might not be for you. Though actually the wood stove that we got at my house, the EPA certification says it's legal to use in Brooklyn. Or in urban areas like that. I have an interview with Molly Hale. I'm going to play next. I'm here at Molly Hale's house. And Molly, I know that you heat with wood. How come?
Well, we got a wood stove quite a few years ago, and it's really changed the way we actually heat the house. In other words, the way we use the house. Because instead of just having central heating where all the house is sort of the same temperature, or it's all basically uniform, this way, you have one area that's really nice and warm, and you can always go to that area. If you get cold, you can warm up your feet or sit there and just get nice and toasty, and it makes a really nice little atmosphere right there. But it also has, we didn't expect this when we did it, when we changed over, but the upstairs, we don't really heat it now, per se. We aren't using any oil at all now. No oil. We've only been using wood, and we only go through about 2 cords in a winter, which is amazing compared to all the oil that we used to burn. So you have this nice little warm place downstairs. But anyway, so the upstairs, we just let it stay cool because we really only use it, our bedroom is up there, and that's the only thing we do. And we like to sleep with it cool anyway. It's nice to sleep with it cool. And we use our upstairs to store the sweet potatoes and the butternut squash because they like it between 55 and 60 degrees. And so that's exactly what the temperature is up there. So it's perfect for storing the vegetables. And we don't have any problem with ice dams on the roof because it makes a big difference if it's like 55 or 60 versus 65 to 70. It makes a big difference with the melting that goes on the roof. So no ice dam problems and saving tons of money. And then down here, we just have a little fan set up so it circulates around downstairs. And some of that heat goes upstairs a lot. It's just plenty warm because it just heats a smaller space, and we just end up using kind of a smaller space in the winter.
Do you do anything to warm up your beds before you go to bed?
Oh, well, sometimes Bick brings a hot water bottle up to get his feet warm. He'll usually sit by the stove until his feet are nice and warm and then go upstairs. You don't get that kind of chilled down feeling that you sometimes get in a house when the thermostat's turned down. You can always just get really nice and toasty by the stove. But another thing, sometimes we have these round river stones that we have on top of our stove, and we heat those up. And my aunt made these little rock pockets for them, made out of cloth. quilted things, and you put the rocks inside there, and then you can sit and put them under your feet and warm up your feet if you're sitting like at the computer or something. So we use the rocks in the rock socks for that.
When you switched over to wood, do you have any concerns about it affecting the environment differently?
Yeah.
The pollution?
Well, I really don't like that part. That's the thing I don't like about it. It does. We try to burn. We burn it as hot as we can. We don't let it smolder overnight. We usually we light it in the morning, burn it nice and hot, and we usually keep it pretty hot most of the day, 600 to 700 when it's burning. Never let it drop down below 500 until it's going out. But usually we'll light it in the morning. We go off to work, let it go out, and then come home at night and light it in the evening and let it go out. And so we don't keep it smoldering all night long with the, that's what makes the really worst pollution is just creates a lot more smoke and pollution. Plus you get more creosote in your chimney and everything. So yeah, we don't do that. We burn it hot and keeps the chimney nice and clean too. Yeah. But even with that, it is still, I don't like the, the smell that goes, I like the wood smoke smell, but I don't like the pollution that it means. That's a disadvantage, but I figure it's, burning two cords of wood is better than burning all that amount of oil.
Mm-hmm. Plus being able to use the heat in the more efficient kind of
exactly.
location.
Well, that's why we only burn two cords of wood, and most people go through a lot more cords of wood because I guess they're trying to heat the whole house the same as they were before.
Mm-hmm. Where do you get your wood from, and what's that process like for you?
Well, there's a couple different places. We've gotten it from Lashway. We've gotten it from Ken Kohler, which is Bay Road Firewood, I think he calls it. And we've gotten it from another guy in central Massachusetts. And it's a little different each time. One place we got this amazing oak that took, we always buy our wood green, so you have to let it season at least a year, usually. We try to get it a year in advance. But the oak that we got, we let it season extra long, and because it needed it, they said it had to season longer. But when it burned, it was incredible. I mean, those logs would just burn, last forever. They were just really dense, dense, good heat. Incredible. But more typically, we get a mixture of beech and maple and birch and stuff like that, which burns okay. That's fine. It's hardwood. But it's not like that really intense oak. And then part of the process sometimes is splitting it, too. Vic is a carpenter, so he gets a lot of kindling from leftover lumber from building jobs. Mm-hmm. But if we don't have that, then we have to split kindling ourselves with an axe and a chopping block.
When you start a fire, what are some tricks to make it smoke the least?
Basically the way you do it is you put a lot of crumpled paper in there, and then you put some of the kindling sticks on top, and you lay them crisscross so there's air that can circulate through it. And then maybe lay one smallish log on top. That's what I do. Open it all the way up. Open the draft of the chimney all the way up. And then just light it and let it start going. But the tricky part is at the time of year when it's the temperature inside and outside is almost the same. Mm-hmm. The problem with that is sometimes you can get a backdraft. And so what we do then is we lay the whole fire so it's laid out, the paper and the kindling and everything, ready to go. Then you take a piece of newspaper and you light it and you stick it up the chimney and it gets the draft going up the chimney. You do that first before you light the fire. Mm-hmm. Once you get the draft going, then you can light it and it goes up there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a terrible problem with backdraft at my house sometimes. And so we used to try the newspaper up the chimney trick, but a lot of times that wouldn't even work.
Oh.
The house would fill with smoke.
Well,
we have a little electric heater that we put in there. So we'll put in there for a minute, two minutes as we're building the
Do you have
fire.
A short chimney or and one with bends in it?
No bends. It's straight up, but it's relatively short.
Because ours is straight and tall, and that's the kind that gives the best draft.
Yeah.
If you have a chimney with a lot of elbows in it and or if it's a short distance, the draft isn't as good.
Yeah. Do you know anything about how to be sure that your firewood comes from a sustainably harvested place?
Firewood is... it's not a thing that makes money for the landowner. It's just a way to improve the forest by getting rid of the lower quality trees.
In my household, we collect a lot of trees that have already fallen down. Mm. And sometimes I wonder, am I robbing the forest? When you scrape up all the mulch from under something.
Right.
I mean, it's a
fraction, but...
Well, I don't think you really have to worry about it for small pieces. Well, if you're in a forest with wildlife, you know, the large logs on the ground serve a really good, important function. It's called coarse woody debris. And it's important to have logs on the ground because they provide microhabitat for little mice and salamanders to go underneath. It's moister under there. It's protected. There's little tunnels. You turn over a log and you see all kinds of little tunnels and animals that have been using it. So it provides a habitat feature. Plus, you know, if it's a hollow log from a dead tree, it makes a great hollow log that bigger animals can go into. And then other animals like snakes or weasels or whatever come around and hunt those animals. And so it's sort of like it's an important component for the forest. Plus, it does return some of the nutrients to the soil and some of the minerals that would be removed otherwise. So it's not good to take all the logs off the ground of the forest and just leave it kind of bare. Like, some people think that it's ugly looking to have it cluttered with all kinds of logs and dead trees and stuff, but actually, it's from a habitat point of view, it's really sterile just to have trees standing there with no dead trees. Everything's perfectly healthy and nothing on the ground and no understory or anything. It looks like a park. That's just like really diminished habitat value. So your question of, is it bad to take logs out of the forest? Well, it depends how many, I guess.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to take all of them out. You know, a few is probably all right, but...
Yeah. I guess compared to... How would you compare collecting trees that have already fallen over versus selectively cutting trees for firewood?
Well, if you're selectively cutting them for firewood, usually the way it's done is that they select the firewood trees to cut that are near, maybe competing with another tree that's a higher quality, so-called, for timber. And so by removing that tree, the other trees are going to fill in around it. But either way, you're taking away a tree that would have been coarse woody debris on the ground. So in that way, it's kind of comes out the same.
That was Molly Hale, a neighbor in Florence. You've been listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio 103.3. Also streaming online at valleyfreeradio.org. Also, you can listen to my shows. I'm Ruthie Woodring, and my shows, past shows, are online at weatherbeard.com/Ruthie. weatherbeard.com/RUTHY. I've only started the show a couple months ago, so there's not a whole lot of shows on there, but there is what there is. One more thing I forgot to say about splitting wood. If you use an axe or a maul, one thing you can do is if you have a wide chopping block, you can put a tire on its side on the chopping block and put the pieces you want to split inside the tire. And then every time you split the wood just sort of stays in the tire and doesn't fall off the chopping block. So you don't have to pick the half-cut pieces again to get them down into quarter pieces. My housemate, Mikey, came up with that trick. Or he saw it on YouTube or somewhere. So Valley Free Radio has a bunch of other shows that are great to listen to. Here's one you might like.
Every day in the electronic media, people talk, or more likely yell, about politics.
We do things differently.
Our job is to talk about the things that we hope will be of interest to you, without all the shouting and anger.
We hope to provide facts and have reasonable discussions about the issues of the day.
That is to disagree without being disagreeable.
Join us every Friday at 7 p.m. for Civil Politics here on WXOJLP 103.3 FM in Northampton or anytime online at civilpoliticsradio.wordpress.com.
So Democracy Now! Will be on at 5 o'clock after this show. Sort of to wrap up some stuff about wood burning.
So if you're thinking about getting a wood stove, choosing the right equipment is important. Conventional fireplaces without heat recovery are inherently wasteful and polluting. A lot of the newer wood stoves, the exhaust passes through some chambers and so that the gases are more completely burned. If you have a fireplace instead of a wood stove, one of the things you can do to improve efficiency is to install an insert.
If you have a wood stove, and you burn firewood, the wood should be flaming until only charcoal remains. If there's no flames, it means something's wrong. And if the appliance has a glass door with air wash, it should be clear. You can see in the glass and see to make sure that the wood is flaming. In conclusion, because wood is only slightly processed from its natural form and because its use tends to be local, far less energy is consumed in making it available as a heating fuel than virtually all other options. In contrast, as the remaining oil and gas reserves get consumed, producers must go into more inhospitable places to get more, places like the Arctic and offshore under oceans. And they also have to tap into less appealing sources like tar sands, in which huge energy investments must be made to get small returns. Then these fuels must be refined at great efficiency losses and then piped half a continent away to market. Needless to say, wood wins hands down in the net energy competition. If you enjoy collecting, you enjoy being in the woods and being outside and doing work that feels meaningful or purposeful, then firewood may also be the way to go. And so to close out the show, being someone who values human power and determination, I'm going to play this song. This is Harry Belafonte singing.
John Henry, he could hammer, he could whistle, he could sing. Went to the mountain early in the morning just to hear his hammer ring. Lord, Lord, just to hear his hammer ring. Just to hear his hammer ring. Lord, Lord, just to hear his hammer ring. When John Henry was a little baby, sitting on his daddy's knee, picked up a hammer and a little piece of steel, said, hammer be the death of me, Lord God, yes, hammer be the death of me. Yes, hammer be the death of me, Lord, Lord, yes, hammer be the death of me. Well, John Henry's family needed money, said he didn't have but a dime. If you wait till the rising sun goes down, I'll get it from the men in the mine. Lord, Lord, I'll get it from the men in the mine. I'll get it from the men in the mine. Lord, Lord, I'll get it from the men in the mine. Well, the captain said to John Henry, John Henry, what can you do? I can hoist a jack, I can lay a track, I can pick and shovel too. Lord God, I can pick and shovel too. I can pick and shovel too. Lord, Lordy, I can pick and shovel too. Well, John Henry said to the captain, oh, a man ain't nothing but a man. But let your steam drill beat me down. Well, I'll die with the hammer in my hand. Lord God, I'll die with the hammer in my hand. Yes, I'll die with the hammer in my hand. Lord, Lord, I'll die with the hammer in my hand. Well, the captain said to John Henry, I'm gonna bring me a steam drill around. Gonna bring me a steam drill out on the job. Gonna wire that steel on down. Lord, Lord, gonna wire that steel on down. I gonna whoop that steel on down. Lord, Lordy, gonna whoop that steel on down. Well, John Henry said to his shaker, shaker, what don't you sing? Throwing 15 pounds from my hips on down. Listen to the cold steel ring. Lord, Lord, yes, listen to the cold steel ring. Oh, listen to the cold steel ring. Lord, Lordy, won't you listen to the cold steel ring? Well, the man who invented the steam drill thought he was mighty fine. John Henry drove his 15 feet and the steam drill only made 9. Lord, Lord, steam drill only made 9. Yes, the steam drill only made 9. Lord, Lord, the steam drill only made 9. Well, the captain said to John Henry, oh, your mountain's sinking in. John Henry said to the captain, oh, mine, nothing but my hammer sucking wind. Lord, Lord, nothing but my hammer sucking wind. Ain't nothing but my hammer sucking wind. Lord, Lordy, ain't nothing but my hammer sucking wind. Well, John Henry said to the captain, look yonder what I see. hold done choke, your drill done broke, and you can't drive steel like me, Lord, Lord, can't drive steel like me. Oh, you can't drive steel like me, no, no, you can't drive steel like me. Well, John Henry drove into the mountain, yes, his hammer was striking fire. He drove so hard, he broke his poor heart when he laid down his hammer and he died. Lord, Lord, laid down his hammer and he died. Yes, he laid down his hammer and he died. Lord, Lord, he laid down his hammer and he died. Well, John Henry had a little woman, and the name was Polly Ann. She walked down the track, never looked back. Polly Ann drove steel like a man. Lord, Lord, Polly Ann drove steel like a man. Polly Ann drove steel like a man. Lord, Lord, Polly Ann drove steel like a man. Well, the people took John Henry to the White House, and they buried him in the sand. Heavy locomotive come roaring by, says, there lies a steel-driving man, Lord God, yes, there lies a steel-driving man. Yes, there lies a steel-driving man, hoo-wee, there lies a steel-driving man. Yes, there lies a steel-driving man, Lord, Lord, yes, there lies a steel-driving man.